The next moment, it was hard to say by whose act, she was in his arms. At the beginning he had no feeling except sheer incredulity. The youthful body was strained against his own, the mass of dark hair was against his face, and yes, actually she had turned her face up and he was kissing the wide red mouth. She had clasped her arms about his neck. She was calling him darling, precious one, loved one. He had pulled her down to the ground. She was utterly unresisting. He could do what he liked with her. But the truth was that he had no physical sensation except that of mere contact. All he felt was incredulity and pride. He was glad that this was happening, but he had no physical desire. It was too soon. Her youth and prettiness had frightened him. He was too much used to living without women. He did not know the reason. The girl picked herself up and pulled a bluebell out of her hair. She sat against him, putting her arm round his waist. "Never mind, dear. There's no hurry. We've got the whole afternoon. Isn't this a splendid hideout? I found it when I got lost once on a community hike. If anyone was coming, you could hear them 100 meters away." "What is your name?" said Winston.
"Julia.
I know yours. It's Winston. Winston Smith."
"How did you find that out?"
"I expect I'm better at finding things out than you are, dear. Tell me, what did you think of me before that day I gave you the note?" He did not feel any temptation to tell lies to her. It was even a sort of love offering to start off by telling the worst. "I hated the sight of you," he said. "I wanted to rape you and then murder you afterwards. 2 weeks ago I thought seriously of smashing your head in with a cobblestone. If you really want to know, I imagined that you had something to do with the thought police." The girl laughed delightedly, evidently taking this as a tribute to the excellence of her disguise.
"Not the thought police. You didn't honestly think that."
"Well, perhaps not exactly that. But from your general appearance, merely because you're young and fresh and healthy, you understand, I thought that probably..."
"You thought I was a good party member, pure in word and deed. Banners, processions, slogans, games, community hikes, all that stuff.
And you thought that if I had a quarter of a chance, I'd denounce you as a thought criminal and get you killed off?"
"Yes, something of that kind. A great many young girls are like that, you know."
"It's this bloody thing that does it," she said, ripping off the scarlet sash of the Junior Anti-Sex League and flinging it onto a bough. Then, as though touching her waist had reminded her of something, she felt in the pocket of her overalls and produced a small slab of chocolate. She broke it in half and gave one of the pieces to Winston. Even before he had taken it, he knew by the smell that it was very unusual chocolate. It was dark and shiny and was wrapped in silver paper. Chocolate normally was dull, brown, crumbly stuff that tasted, as nearly as one could describe it, like the smoke of a rubbish fire. But at some time or another he had tasted chocolate like the piece she had given him. The first whiff of its scent had stirred up some memory which he could not pin down, but which was powerful and troubling.
"Where did you get this stuff?" he said.
"Black market," she said indifferently. "Actually, I am that sort of girl to look at. I'm good at games. I was a troop leader in the spies. I do voluntary work 3 evenings a week for the Junior Anti-Sex League. Hours and hours I've spent pasting their bloody rot all over London. I always carry one end of a banner in the processions. I always look cheerful, and I never shirk anything. Always yell with the crowd. That's what I say. It's the only way to be safe."